Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Jewelry isn't a gift you give just once. It's a way to remind your loved one of a beautiful moment every time they see it. Blue Nile can help you find the gift that says how you feel and says it beautifully, with expert guidance and a wide assortment of jewelry of the highest quality at the best price. Go to BlueNile.com and experience the convenience of shopping Blue Nile, the original online jeweler since 1999. That's BlueNile.com to find the perfect jewelry gift for any occasion. BlueNile.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hello and welcome back to the Thistle Scottish Rugby podcast. This week we are without Dave, sadly. I think he might be on a little golfing tour in Saudi Arabia with one Mark Dodson, but that's yet to be confirmed. So it's just Matt and Alan here this week. Alan, how are you doing?
Yeah, good. I mean, do you know what? Dave probably doesn't look too dissimilar from a young Mark Dodson as well. So maybe it's sort of like illegitimate son-father trip.
I could definitely see Dave like eventually heading the SRU and being like a real hate figure because he'd be like really hard nosed and would just speak his mind, would just completely disregard the council.
Yeah, just continuously funneling cash into Watsonians.
Yeah, exactly. Better than Stanley Swan, I suppose. For the people who don't know, you can follow us on lots of social media channels, Twitter at Thistle Rugby Pod, Instagram at Thistle_Rugby_Pod. And we've got our weekly newsletter, which was absent this week, but that's on Substack, Thistle Scottish Rugby Podcast. There's been a lot to unpack over the last week in Scottish rugby. You've had the Scotland Summer Tour squad named yesterday. You had both pro teams in quarterfinal action at the weekend, and obviously Danny Wilson getting the chop at Glasgow. Why don't we start with Danny Wilson, Alan? What were your views? Were you surprised at how quickly it happened, or you know, does it kind of make sense given the form that Glasgow have been on, culminating in that thrashing at the weekend?
I wasn't surprised that it happened off the back of the season, but I was maybe a little bit surprised at the speed of which it happened post the match against Leinster on Saturday. I would have thought that it was one of these things that you'd almost let kind of the dust settle a little bit. You know, I'm sort of doing air quotes, do some sort of kind of like internal review of the season, you know, go through some sort of process and then be like, oh, through this, we've decided that we're going to let Danny Wilson go, et cetera, et cetera. But it was quite surprising that literally within what must have been 3 days, 72 hours, Danny Wilson had been given the chop, and obviously not 100% clear how much exactly was, you know, Danny Wilson sort of falling on the sword himself and how much it was sort of Dodson sort of swinging the sword. But I think not surprised it happened, but thought it would maybe be done sort of during the summertime.
Do you think there was an element of the Glasgow performance in that Leinster game in particular that suggested he had just completely lost the dressing room, or that just something is not right in Glasgow at the moment? Because I even think in some of the games that they've fallen off in this season, towards the end of this season, I still think kind of the effort and application has been there. Whereas it didn't seem to be the case on Saturday at all.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think especially when you look back to some of the games early in the season, I even thinking back to some of the La Rochelle games where they lost in Europe, and obviously that, you know, that was even though they lost, they showed a level of kind of work rate and endeavour, which you sort of would suggest is a team that sort of they're playing together, playing for the coaching staff. But you know, that was one of the real big things about the game against Leinster. I appreciate there was a couple of yellow cards, but it really felt that Leinster could probably break the line at will.
Yeah,
and even on top of that, you know, let's for a moment say right that the line's been broken. That's fine, but then even then, the scramble defense from Glasgow on a lot of occasions was relatively non-existent. You'd see people sort of breaking the line, and there'd be sort of five or six Leinster's kind of support runners versus kind of literally just like one or two Glasgow players tracking back. And I think it really did feel, especially sort of going into that second half, that the Glasgow players had completely sort of shut off from the match. And to your point, I wonder how much, you know, ultimately, I don't think you should need this to be motivated to perform, but ultimately I imagine part of that potentially was that the players just weren't willing to play for Danny or didn't believe in the game that they were trying to play in that match.
Yeah, and I think that Wilson and a couple of the players made the point that they conceded, what was it, 40 points in those two yellow cards as a sort of, not an excuse, but some sort of mitigation. But then you looked at both of those yellow cards and they were almost so symptomatic of Glasgow's recent struggles, just brain dead decisions that suggest there's maybe something a bit more deep seated rather than them, you know, being unlucky. I think that discipline has plagued them this season.
I was just going to say, I guess I was thinking through what I guess what the defense for Danny Wilson would be. Yeah, I guess ultimately, you know, and I think one point you pointed to is it feels like, and again, Glasgow haven't been given the level of resource in terms of signings that potentially Edinburgh have been given in terms of kind of bringing that new blood in. I know we sort of mentioned sort of you've got Edinburgh getting someone like Befeli in, who is just a genuinely sort of world-class player. And Glasgow maybe haven't had those sort of signings coming into the club.
Yeah, I do have some sympathy with that. But then I look at the fact that the resource has kind of been there. I think it's just been allocated poorly. So in recent seasons, I think Richie Gray has toiled manfully for Glasgow, but he's not the player he used to be. And I think as a leader in that squad, besides sort of a good work rate and a lot of tackles, which I completely respect, I think he's been quite an expensive guy to have around. Signed Nakarawa, which was pretty disastrous overall. Given the money to buy sign Hugh Jones, given the money to sign Josh Mackay, who I don't think would have come cheap.
Yeah.
Dempsey as well, maybe.
No, I think that's fair.
I get it. I do get that. But I was gonna ask sort of like, you know, the mitigating circumstances that Wilson has come in at a pretty horrific time. And I think even a good coach who's getting the best out of his players, it's clear that the likes of Wilson, Harley, etc., are coming to the end of their careers. He's starting to get his own way with signings, making his own mark on the squad. Like, was it too early?
No, absolutely. And I think, you know, John Barclay tweeted it earlier in the week. You know, you look back to sort of April time and ultimately Glasgow were third in the league with that squad that, you know, Danny Wilson's had available to him, and ultimately were sort of 17 points ahead of Lyon, who went on to win the Challenge Cup in the quarterfinals of the Challenge Cup. The sort of, you know, ultimately it feels like, you know, you look back even sort of less than 2 months ago, and actually you could create quite a sort of rosy picture of what the season has been for Glasgow. And I think I appreciate they've had this sort of run of away matches, which seems to really just sort of sucked the life out of both kind of the team and also just the general fan base in terms of their views on Danny Wilson.
And who do you think are the sort of forerunners to take over him? Because we haven't really sort of seen, there's been a lot of speculation, but on Twitter, but not really based on anything concrete. But who do you think would be a candidate? And do you think that, you know, it's cash strap times for the SRU, they're more likely to do a bit of a shuffling of the decks, or do you think they'll go all out for for the best person for the job?
Sort of say they're cash strapped, but ultimately when they're sort of signing people like Wes Goosen and even someone like Sam Skinner, feels like they've at least got some capital to deploy. And it feels like at Glasgow, that squad really needs, it needs a top level coach to kind of bring that all back together. And I wonder, given the fact that there isn't really anyone within the Scotland ranks who can easily just sort of shift over. I know we've chatted about Pete Horn, basically had a year at Ayrshire. I know Pete Murch has had a little bit longer, but again, feels like he's still more in that sort of assistant coach role. I guess a couple of people within Scotland set up, but still no one that's really been there for too long or sort of naturally feels like someone who's going to step up to that sort of top role at Glasgow.
Yeah, I think you're right. I don't think there is an obvious choice amongst the internal candidates, but it's quite close to World Cup. Like, I just wonder if they'll go for a bit of a stopgap appointment.
Yeah.
Which I think is just going to, clearly, you know, Al Kellett was talking about this and sort of the announcement that Danny Wilson was going, that the sort of sentiment amongst Glasgow fans is pretty low at the moment. And the fact that they obviously put up their season ticket prices at just a pretty bad time overall, that if they do sort of, you know, no disrespect to these guys, but if they brought in a John DL, a Murchie, et cetera, which I think maybe John DL might be a candidate. I don't think it's going to inspire that many Glasgow fans. I don't think that Glasgow fans are going to rush out to pay the extra for their season tickets.
No. And I guess the couple that have been mentioned, so obviously Lancaster, external ones that have been mentioned, you've got Lancaster has been thrown around, which I have enjoyed the sort of Lancaster renaissance, but at the same time, I'm just not quite sure if he's the right person for Glasgow, especially given the sort of type of players that Glasgow have at the moment anyway.
I think there's a lot of wishful thinking around any coach involved in the Irish setup could come over, which, you know, if they could get someone like Paul O'Connell, for instance, I wouldn't be mad about it, but I don't know if Glasgow's that appealing a place to be in at the moment.
Well, thinking about Ireland, you've obviously got Dan McFarlane is not going to come, but I guess Roddy Grant, as well as his assistant, is someone who's, you know, done a lot of time with Edinburgh, has gone out to another country and sort of learned kind of additional sort of ways of working, etc. Obviously, still sort of under sort of Dan McFarlane. Do you think he's someone that they might try and sort of bring back? He sort of understands kind of the SOU machinery.
Yeah, I don't see why not. Once again, sort of slightly unproven as a head coach, but a Scottish guy doing well at Ulster. I don't see why you wouldn't at least sound him out.
Yeah.
And I think he would be keen to come back to Scotland. So I suppose as soon as you get in that that SRU tent, like the path to becoming maybe a Scotland coach, it's fairly, not straightforward, but it's quite a clear pathway.
100%. The only other one I was thinking was maybe like someone like a Tony Brown, obviously.
Yeah, that would be quite good.
I appreciate, you know, I think actually retrospectively when you look back at sort of Dave Rennie, you know, ultimately semi-final, a final just missed out at home, I think you've got to classify it as a bit of a success. He sort of came at the back end of sort of Tony and probably came with almost like his PR was almost too good when he came. Everyone was like, this guy is like the genius of rugby. But I wonder whether, again, you know, if they do have the money, whether you could almost pick up again sort of a relatively strong Kiwi coach. And I always think, whether this is true or not, I always think when someone from a coach from New Zealand comes over, there's just automatically like a level of like respect that comes from, especially like players and media, just because they are from New Zealand.
Yeah, definitely. I wonder if there's just like a sort of 10-15% immediate uplift to performances as well. But yeah, we'll see what happens. Keep an eye on that. It'll be interesting to see who they appoint, because it's not clear. There's no sort of assistant coaches or anything there that would be obvious successors. Keeping on the... So yeah, we've not really talked about the Leinster game too much, but I don't think there's actually that much to discuss. It was a pretty humiliating day overall.
Worst match in recent memory of any sort of Scottish team, including national?
I'm just trying to think, like, when we shipped 60 to England at Twickenham.
Yeah, that was tough.
When Glasgow shipped 50 to Exeter.
Yeah.
But then it was like Glasgow had a lot of injuries and kind of saw it coming. But yeah, this is definitely up there.
I think, and we sort of touched on a little bit with Danny Wilson, is I feel like almost like if they lost by like 40, 50 points, and just from a sort of tactic standpoint, have been completely sort of blown off the park, and a lot of what Glasgow were trying to do just hadn't worked out. I would almost have less sympathy. I would definitely have less sympathy for sort of Danny Wilson, but it's the fact that they got so obliterated and they were just so dominated in almost all facets of the match, especially after being basically 7-0 up as well.
Yeah.
I really do think that there is a lot of question marks around that sort of playing group and whether there is the right mix of sort of senior and junior and sort of international and more sort of regular club players there to sort of take that team forward. Because it really just felt like it's just a complete capitulation and just a complete dearth of leadership across the whole team.
Yeah, and within that you had three Lions, you had including a Test Lion. You got multiple internationals. I appreciate that some of them aren't, you know, first picks to Scotland or aren't in the national setup anymore. But yeah, you'd like to think there's like a basic level of standards in defence and professionalism and that kind of thing. I think that, I don't know, those guys don't become sort of bad players or don't put or not giving as much effort overnight. So I wonder if there's just something with the coaching, something cultural there that's just not been working under Danny Wilson and his coaches. But then moving on to Edinburgh, they obviously went down to the Stormers in the other quarterfinal. You know, probably beaten by the better side on the day, but fronted up physically. And if a few moments had gone their way, then they could have potentially snuck it.
Yeah, I think, to your point, I did feel like the Stormers were just that touch better. And even when Edinburgh had that sort of mini resurgence and kind of like with about sort of 15 minutes to go, it still just felt like the Stormers were just a little bit out of reach. I mean, it's just with these South African teams, there's just ultimately just this level of physicality that it's just really hard for any of the Scottish teams to sort of deal with. You could see, you know, a lot of those, even people like, you know, Watson and Gilchrist, who, when you sort of go into contact, there just isn't any of those easy yards within sort of the inside centre, any of those channels. And it's just a constant, just kind of like these massive South African men just sort of throwing themselves at you. And I think that is something that, you know, we've talked about at a national level that Scotland struggle with. And I still think it's something that Edinburgh and Glasgow continue to sort of struggle with when a team just is able to sort of have that sort of minor sort of physical domination on them.
Yeah, I think as well, it's been a long season for a lot of those guys. And like the last thing they want to have is look up and see like this relentless, physical, fit South African pack who are just not going to let up at all. And I probably underestimated it. Obviously, Storms have been going well recently, but I probably underestimated how good a side they are. And they've got some nice players in the backs like Warren Gallant. There's another big test for Kinghorn. You know, how do you think he did overall? Obviously, he sort of was at fault for that opening try for the Stormers. But do you think we can now sort of make a call as to whether he should, we should stick with him as a standoff?
Yeah, it's such a tough one. I think it's so difficult as like a Scottish rugby fan, because I think you sort of almost too often look at it through the prism of like the Scottish team rather than like what's actually best for Edinburgh and Glasgow. I think across this sort of, I think actually across the whole season, I would say Kinghorn has done significantly better than I actually thought he would. And I think probably most people thought he would do at 10.
Yeah.
I think when he can get the front foot ball, he is an unbelievably dangerous kind of attacking threat. I still just don't quite think he has demonstrated in those big matches, in those big pressure moments in matches, that he is a 10 that can sort of step up to that international level. And so maybe that, you know, ultimately, you know, that's not a terrible thing, right? Like ultimately it feels like for his first year as a 10, as a pro, that's a pretty successful outcome, right?
Well, that would be my argument, that like he has definitely surpassed expectations. But I think he's, in a sense, he's almost just proved what he's always been good at, which is the running game. He's got good skills. He's creative. He can kick the ball. He's got good distance on his peg. But the sort of the question marks around his game management, and sort of tactical kicking in general, which are the questions that we had at the start of the season, they probably got better, but I still think they're pretty unanswered. We'll come on to it, but I do find that the fact that Hastings is now back in the Scotland squad, I just kind of think, what is the point of this experiment overall? I mean, maybe this season's shown that Ross Thompson, despite a pretty good start to things at Glasgow, isn't quite ready. But if you're looking for a player that can cover both 10 and 15 and other positions as your sub, then they already had Adam Hastings. So it's still a bit of a strange one for me.
Yeah, no, I get it. It'd be really interesting to see who starts between him and Hastings for the first match in Argentina. But to your sort of earlier point, I do think, you know, there has been a progression. And I guess it's whether he is able to continue progressing next year. And if he does, then, you know, hopefully he's sort of getting to that stage where he is getting good enough to play for Scotland and able to sort of dominate those big sort of club matches. You know, obviously he's going to have Champions Cup next year, which is a pretty good one, as well. So, no.
Do you think, you know, that was maybe barring Vellacott, who's injured, that was Edinburgh's best team, right? Pretty much. And although they made a few signings for next year, like Hewson, who I think will be an improvement, is it a slight worry that Edinburgh are able to put out their very best team and sort of not trouble the opposition in those bigger games? I'm thinking Ulster, Wasps, and now the Stormers. I mean, I think we need to remember it's all relative, and at the start of the year we were probably low expectations. But you know, is that a slight worry?
Yeah, it's an interesting one. I think potentially there was a few injuries that meant the bench wasn't as strong as it would have been. So like people like Bo Inventor and Rambo, etc., weren't there. And I think potentially if he'd been fully fit, you would have had a Lang in there. You put on the forward pack, I still think there is a lot to be enthused about for next season. Just because I do think you've got quite a lot of depth prop in the front row. I think Skinner does bring just a bit more sort of heft to that row, and I think you still see people like Sykes and Hodgson and even Glenn Young developing. And then when you look at that back row, Bradbury is leaving, but I do think Ben Muncaster is like the real deal. And then obviously Richie to come back next season. I do think there is a chance for that sort of pack to sort of move forward. And if they can start to get parity or even start to kind of slightly dominate teams in those bigger matches, then hopefully that gives the platform to Vellacott and Kinghorn, which you expect to be the starting 9-10 going into next season, I think a lot to play with. So I'm not as worried. I think there's enough of people to come back and enough scope for sort of progression with other people for Edinburgh to be in a pretty good place next year.
Yeah, I agree. It is, someone was sort of asking the question on Twitter today that, like, ultimately at the end of the season, Glasgow and Edinburgh have had exactly the same experience, pretty much. Both knocked out in the quarterfinals of the URC and the Challenge Cup. But you've got Warriors fans who are, like, pretty bereft of hope, and Edinburgh fans who, you know, new stadium, like, there's a really good vibe around Edinburgh and Mike Blair at the moment.
Yeah, no, exactly. I mean, it's like the fact that Wales won the Six Nations like 17 months ago, and basically every Welsh fan is in complete meltdown about the future of, like, Welsh rugby and all hate Pivac. You know, it's ultimately you can only compare to what you've had previously. And I think Edinburgh just kind of coming out of those Cockerell sort of lean years at the end, especially sort of that sort of final sort of 12 months, I think ultimately you've got to sort of benchmark this year on where they've come from. And I think you can only say that both in terms of results and performance, Edinburgh have gone forward and Glasgow have sort of started to go slightly backwards.
Yeah.
But I do appreciate the point.
Yeah, yeah. I think you're right though. Should we move on to the summer tour squad? So Townsend's announced a 40-man squad for the summer tour in Chile and Argentina. I'm not going to bore you with the full list. You can see our Twitter for that. But what were your first impressions, Alan? Did you maybe expect more of a sort of experimental approach versus how much experience, I suppose, Townsend's gone for with his squad?
I think I probably did, but actually, retrospectively, I think that was probably a little bit of a stupid assumption, because I think ultimately what you've sort of seen in that team is he's not taking anyone that he doesn't believe doesn't have a chance of being part of that World Cup squad. You know, ultimately, I feel like everyone in that group, they've probably identified as being someone who's either ready right now to be in a World Cup squad or has the scope over the next 12 months to be part of the World Cup squad. So I know, so you look at people like Connor Boyle, or even someone like Jamie Dolby, for example. I wonder whether, you know, whilst obviously they're really good players, given the sort of depth in those respective positions and the other people around, I wonder whether they just made a call that actually it's not worth giving them, kind of taking up a place when ultimately right now you're almost kind of in this kind of like T minus, you know, 16 months until the World Cup, and it's all about kind of continuing to grow sort of cohesion and getting players sort of playing together.
And what did you make of the sort of high profile missions, namely Hogg and Russell not touring? Do you think there's much to read into?
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
That, or do you think it's just a sensible approach to sort of player game time management?
I did see Tune mention that they've all got sort of niggly injuries. I know obviously Russell has been in a bit of a in something anyway. Hogg's got kind of like the odd niggle, and then I think Harris had a bit of an issue before their final match against Saracen. So I just wonder if, you know, ultimately the kind of slightly older guys, super important. So you've kind of got a mix of wanting to rest them, but then also potentially taking three of those probably most senior, most influential members and potentially giving a chance to some of those slightly younger guys to kind of step up on the tour and take on more of a leadership role.
I think as well, with particularly standoff and fullback, like the options behind those first choices aren't maybe quite there. So
yeah,
I think the chance to give, yeah, I don't know who they'll play from Kinghorn and Hastings, but you know, I think you said before that like if they're serious about Kinghorn, he has to play as many minutes as possible. And then maybe someone like Ollie Smith is the, you know, long-term successor to Hogg. And also he's the guy that we look to if Hogg is injured. Whereas I don't think there's maybe an obvious choice at the moment. I think Kinghorn was the obvious choice, but that's changed a lot.
Yeah, no, it's a good shout on sort of on the fullback piece. It feels like if they've kind of, you know, maybe don't see Kinghorn as a sort of natural replacement, and now that Maitland's kind of out of the squad, there isn't none of the wingers. I know Darcy Graham's done a little bit, but none of the wingers quite as easily sort of shift into that 15 position. So someone like Ollie Smith, you'd think, is there to get a bit of a run out in case obviously Hogg goes down at any point over the next 18 months.
I think probably the biggest letdown of the squad announcement was there was no like left field unheard of cap. But we are hearing that, what was the guy's name again?
Aidan Ross.
Did he play for the Crusaders?
Chiefs.
There we go. Prop was sounded out, who's Scots qualified, but it sounds as if he's going to be named by the All Blacks in the next squad. But maybe looking at some of the younger guys that have come in, like your Muncaster, you mentioned Murphy Walker, Glenn Young, Matt Curry, Ollie Smith, you know, maybe even Kyle Rowan there. Like which of those selections has sort of got you most excited to see them in action over the summer?
I think out of all the Muncaster one is for me the most exciting, just because I think his ceiling is still so much higher. He's so young, but he just looks like an absolute natural at club level, that I think he could be a the long-term solution for Scotland at number eight, in sort of more of that kind of like Sam Simmons-esque kind of mold. So I'd like to see I really hope he does get at least one start against what will probably be like a pretty physical Argentina pack, right? Matt Curry, I still don't quite get. I don't know, you're always a slightly better centre than me, but just slightly.
I think the fact he was playing for Watsonians in the Super Six last week, and maybe this week actually as well, you know, he's not broken through to that full Edinburgh, you know, he's not a regular, but I suppose he's got, you know, Bennett, Dean, Hutchison to compete with. It's a pretty crowded field. I get the sense that he is seen as like a really kind of heads up, good rugby brain type of player. And Townsend often spoke about it. And I think like the moments he's had for Edinburgh, you can see that. He's a pretty classy player with a good offloading game. And I think Townsend also mentioned today that he's very good at defending the 13 channel, which, as we know, is pretty difficult. So I suppose if you've got all those sort of the raw talents that are maybe harder to teach, and then you layer on like a bit more physicality, a bit more speed, like you've got quite a nice sort of mold to work with.
Thoughts on Kyle Rowe? I know we did hear a rumour that potentially Kyle Rowe might be coming back up to Edinburgh, but nothing's really sort of come out of that over the last couple of weeks.
Yeah, I think London Irish did an announcement of all the players that were leaving, and he wasn't mentioned. And I suppose with Hugh Jones going back to Glasgow now, like, they've got quite a lot of players in the back three. But no, I think it's a really exciting selection. I put up a tweet the other day showing that Kyle Rowe, who I imagine is on a fraction of Doohan's wage at London Irish, has scored 8 tries for London Irish this season in the Premiership. And he is, I think he's third highest number of defenders beaten, both of which are ahead of Doohan, which is pretty incredible, really, considering he was picked up as a sort of 7 squad reject. And he's just looked really impressive whenever he's played for Irish, like beating senior Premiership players with ease. And I think he's got a good all-round game. Like I think he's got a good rugby understanding. He's good under the high ball. He's got a decent boot on him. I think he'd maybe be pushing for a start in one of those Argentina games, actually.
Yeah, I know. I mean, obviously with Darcy and Doohan there, you sort of imagine that they'll maybe start the first test and then you start sort of playing around a little bit. I mean, I know sort of Jamie Lyle did that sort of piece this week about just ultimately with only those 2 teams in Scotland, you just don't, there's just that lack of opportunity for players to be able to kind of demonstrate their qualities at club level. Because I mean, sort of, I can't remember Kyle Rowe, obviously Kyle Rowe was like a good Premiership player, but I can't remember him being this like incredible standout. But ultimately, we sort of talked about it so many times before, there is just players that can just shift up to the next level and ultimately can operate in that sort of environment. Like Chris Harris is another one that ultimately just took a bit of time, but once he was given his chance, was able to adapt and had the game and the sort of skill set to be able to compete for the Lions, right? It's good to see him kind of getting into that squad now, and the same as you, I'm quite keen to see him play.
There's also a few sort of more familiar names back in the squad, most notably Rory Hutchinson and Hugh Jones. Do you think there's any chance of them breaking through to a sort of Six Nations or World Cup starting squad? Or do you think this is just more rewarding form, trying out some options, and Tanzania's not really going to move away from that more defensively solid midfield?
Yeah, well, it's an interesting one with Hutchison, because ultimately by picking Redpath, Tooney's shown that he's willing to pick someone who is more there for their attacking capabilities than their defensive capabilities, or even to be more specific, kind of the more like distributing capabilities. And so I think there clearly is space for Hutchison in our Scotland backline. And I think ultimately his form has been pretty spectacular, especially sort of the back end of the season. So I'd like to think, given the fact it's just him and Sam Johnson is probably the only two recognised 12s or people who can sort of normally sort of play 12, you think he would get a bit of game from him. I mean, I'd like to see in the starting match, I would say him and Bennett as the starting centre combo.
Yeah, that's what I sort of had written down in my starting 15. I just think it would be nice I think there's sort of question marks around, or perceived question marks around his defence, for instance. But ultimately, he hasn't really been tested at that like Six Nations level. I think he's played a couple of games against the Italians, but I think it's definitely worth chucking him in. And he very much seems like a Townsend type of player, and the kind of player that Finn would like to have outside him, I would imagine.
100%. And it does feel, for both country and club, that Sam Johnson isn't just quite hitting the level needed in that 12 role.
He's solid, but not really done much beyond that.
And I think ultimately, when you have the ability to obviously use Doohan's power, but even Darcy coming off the wing does give you sort of options to do kind of like a hit up if that's what you want to do.
And Harris as well, if you stick with him at 13.
Exactly, which I think ultimately they are going to do no matter what. Which, for someone like Bennett, where you kind of feel like 13, you know, he's not even got the luxury of someone like Hugh Jones, who is trying to sort of, who has had the ability to kind of play a couple of different positions. It does increasingly feel like Bennett is only going to ever play 13 for both club and country.
Yeah.
So you've kind of got this issue where he's kind of stuck behind Harris, even though he's potentially been Edinburgh's best player this season.
Well, he won Player of the Year at their awards this week. So,
yeah.
Yeah, definitely. Anyone you think is unfortunate to miss out? The obvious name is our very own Sweet Prince, who we talked about. I think he was worthy of having a shot, but wasn't to be. I think Bell, we mentioned, is injured. No Finn Smith, but sounds like he's being courted quite closely.
It did sound like Velikot was potentially a bit of almost a injury. He's got like a couple of niggles, sort of thing. I do wonder if Chris Dean was like a couple years younger, he might have got on. Just going back to that point, I wonder whether if you were picking a squad to beat Argentina rather than maybe picking a squad that allows you to beat Argentina whilst also kind of growing the squad as you sort of go towards the World Cup, whether he would have gone in ahead of someone like a Curry. But yeah. I do wonder whether to that point they maybe just don't see him as being part of that World Cup squad in 12, 18 months' time.
Yeah, I think you're right. And I think there is, although the centre positions are slightly up for grabs, I think there are probably quite a few cabs ahead of him in the rank. Do we want to do a kind of like starting 15 for that first Argentina test?
Yeah.
I did write this down today when I was not doing any work, which is quite fun. So my front row was Schoeman, Ashman, and then I'm struggling on Tighthead because I think Xander Fagerson needs a rest, but then I think your other options are Murphy Walker or Sebastian. And I'm not sure about either, really. I think ultimately, like, Tighthead's a position that we clearly don't have a lot of depth in, and we need to try out these players. So I'm sort of heading towards maybe Sebastian as a more experienced player.
I think you've got to start with Xander Fagerson in at least two of the matches, do you not?
Probably. I just think that I really do think he needs... If they had, like, one more player at Tighthead, I think he should have been left at home.
He, out of all the lines that were taken, he feels the most surprising, given just how much he has played over the last sort of 18 months, and the fact he ultimately plays in a position, you know, not that Ali Price and Doohan don't see a lot of contact, but ultimately versus someone like Xander, it's a different kettle of a fish. But at the same time, you know, to your point, ultimately they're going there with two props, which you normally wouldn't probably see in a full Scotland squad. So I just think you're probably inevitably going to have him starting at least two of the matches, and then maybe you give Murphy Walker and Javon Sebastian sort of time off the bench in the first two, and then potentially chuck whoever sort of makes biggest impact the third match at the end.
I kind of thought, I think you're right. I kind of thought there was an argument as well for maybe playing Ashman, just because I think we know everything we need to know about Turner now. And I don't think that playing Ashman means that we've moved away from Turner. But I think that going to the next World Cup, there's is probably quite a good case for selecting Ashman ahead of Brown in particular.
So I guess this goes back to how do you utilise those three matches? Because I probably would put out what I see is almost like the full strength team on the first match and then start to kind of like adapt it and bring people in from there. So maybe you start with Turner, and then again, either look to bring in someone like Ashman in like the second or third match.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Moving to the second rows, it was kind of a difficult one in terms of I think that these Gilchrist is obviously captain, so you'd expect him to start. And then Cummings has had a lot of injuries, but I feel like he could do with the run of games. Whereas, once again, I think that Johnny Gray potentially could benefit from a rest.
Agreed. I think ultimately, when you look at sort of Gilchrist, Cummings, Gray, and then even Skinner, probably just ultimately look to sort of rotate them across the sort of three matches, have Glenn Young there on the bench when needed, and obviously probably play Glenn Young plus Cummings probably in the Chile match.
Or Hodgson, yeah.
Hodgson's in the squad as well. Yeah, oh, shit. So you got six.
Yeah. I get you. I don't think there's sort of two. You'd almost be happy with any of those guys in some capacity, as you say, the rotation. The back row, I went for the Darge Watson combination, and then I stuck Magnus Bradbury at eight, just because I think that Fagerson's been injured recently, and I still feel that there's the potential that Bradbury could be our starting number eight at the next World Cup, and getting him some game time is a sensible idea.
I obviously agree on Watson and Darge, although just point we've made sort of throughout this, I don't think you play Watson in the sort of three matches.
Yeah.
Trying to give him sort of a bit of rest, but obviously have him as part of the squad. Do you not think before he got injured, Matt Ferguson was playing well enough to deserve the starting spot?
I think he was, but he hasn't played since the Six Nations, pretty much, has he?
No.
So I just wonder slightly if you, I don't know, you go with the match fit guy and then bring in Ferguson later on. But yeah, I think I'd be happy with both, I think.
Yeah, no, agreed. And it'd be good to give Crosby a bit more of a run out.
Obviously. Yeah, I'd like to. He's sort of in my Chile team, but I think that, yeah, him and Muncaster sort of fighting for that bench spot. And I think actually probably Crosby's probably ahead of him in those stakes. Because he's been really impressive since he's come back from injury.
Yeah.
And Skinner, once again, is just one of those guys that you'd happily see him slotting in even at six.
Yeah, 100%.
What would you go for in the halfbacks?
I mean, if you're going out there to win the match, I think if I was shooting out to go out to win the match, I'd probably go Price. Hastings or Kinghorn, one of the two. Again, ultimately, I guess you just sort of decide based on what you see as kind of the best choice given what you're trying to achieve from a sort of World Cup standpoint. It feels like you probably end up starting Thompson against Chile and then give one of them two starts and the other one start, maybe.
Yeah, I think so.
Again, with Price, I was a little bit surprised that George Horn maybe got on the tour. Obviously, Ben White kind of looked quite good sort of coming off the bench during the Six Nations. Obviously, good to see him playing a little bit. I wonder if Vellacott was sort of fully fit, whether he would have taken that third spot. But
I think it's I can understand the Horn selection in that he's coming back from injury, and you know that if he gets back to full fitness and is like playing in a good Glasgow team and in a style that suits him, like he's a really good option to have. I don't know. I've kind of if I'm in Townsend's shoes, I wouldn't be surprised if he goes for Kinghorn, just because he seems to have set a stall out. And then I think, Price, if you want to win the game, but I think Price is in desperate need of rest as well. So I wouldn't be that mad with White coming in, or that surprised. I think he's proved himself a pretty handy player, as you say.
Scott Steele's sort of gone off the radar these days, it feels.
Yeah, doesn't really seem to be in the conversation, which is a bit of a shame. And Hidalgo Klein is playing for Benetton? Moving to Benetton?
Oh, yeah. I don't know.
Since he announced he was moving, he's not had a sniff of game time at Exeter.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Such like a quick peak and then just completely fell off the top of the mountain afterwards. I mean,
that's his career, right? It's like making a big splash at a club and then... What in the centres, there's quite a lot of nice options. But I've gone for that combination we discussed of Hutchinson and Bennett.
Yeah, I guess again, it'd be interesting to see what they do against Chile. But I like that combination. I think Bennett has earned a starting place in that centres, especially with Harris at the squad. So I do think it's potentially who partners him. And just given the form that Hutchins is in and the fact that Johnson's a little bit stalled, and I say Tupelo's kind of got his form sort of dropped after what was a pretty strong sort of opening few months, right?
Yeah.
I would like to see, I maybe don't think Tooney will do that though. I could see like Johnson Bennett starting centre.
Thing. Yeah, maybe. I sort of toyed with the idea of having Hugh Jones at 13, but I can't see him getting picked ahead of Harris again. So
do you think Hugh Jones is there as a 13/15?
Yeah, 100%. And I think that if I was him, I'd probably be like, well, where do I have a better chance of breaking through? And maybe it's at 15 rather than 13, actually.
Maybe, I mean, they're ultimately sort of the two worst positions almost at least in the next sort of 12 months, you'd say.
How do you mean worst?
In terms of if you're trying to break into
hardest.
Scotland team. I think maybe post-World Cup, you've then got, I don't know whether how much longevity Stuart Hogg has sort of post the next cycle. Yeah. But, you know, ultimately, I just don't see a scenario in which Chris Harris doesn't start for Scotland at 13 going into the next World Cup, and I even then don't really see a scenario which Stuart Hogg doesn't start at 15.
That's the thing, particularly if I think Tanzim was saying in his interview yesterday, like, we want him to be captain again when he returns. So you know, whether that actually bears out, I don't know, but
yeah
I agree, they're pretty set positions. Who do you have in your back three?
So again, you know, if the game was to win, Darcy, Doohan.
Yeah.
And then, we were chatting a lot about Ollie Smith earlier, but maybe you start Hugh Jones, fullback.
Yeah. I quite like that, I think.
And then definitely giving Kyle Rowe some game time.
Yeah.
And then maybe see a Rufus McLean and Hoyland do against Chile.
Yeah, I think Townsend once again talks about the fact that probably Hoyland and McLean could probably play fullback, I suppose. But I think he was particularly talking about Hoyland. And Hoyland's been really good this season. So, but then I wonder if they will try out the sort of Hastings or Kinghorn at fullback again.
Yeah. I mean, I really don't think that Hastings has ever really done too bad a job at fullback for Scotland.
Considering he's like, that's him being played out of position, and he often has to do it when there's been like random injuries throughout the squad.
Yeah.
I think he's done pretty well.
No, for sure.
So I think that ultimately that's still a pretty good squad that they can put out. It's hard to tell with Argentina how good they'll be, just because on paper I think their squad's pretty good. But you could have said that in recent seasons, and we've always like, we seem to have a really good record against them recently. I'm slightly worried that record is set to turn a bit.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, just sort of thinking back to the last time they toured, and that sort of 9-10 of Horn and Hastings literally tore Argentina apart.
Yeah.
It has always felt, you know, basically over the last 10 years, we've just had the slight sort of upper hand on Argentina. But yeah, it's maybe, it feels like maybe over a month tour, especially with Chile up first and then sort of rolling into that three-game tour, it's going to be a difficult one to especially come out with no losses. But to even sort of win that three-match tour feels it's going to be quite difficult.
Well, I've put out some feelers for Salta and Juju. I've never even heard of Juju. Tour packages. So
I did have a look at return flights, and it was like basically like $1,500. So then you
booked them.
So I've booked all three of us business class.
Oh, thanks, mate.
48-hour trip every weekend into Argentina.
Well, if Dave's negotiations with Mark Dodson have gone well, then you know that'll be pennies.
There you go.
Nice one.
Turn up next week and it's like Thistle presented by Aramco.
I'd listen to the offer, you know.
Right.
On that note, thanks everyone for listening. We'll be back soon-ish, I think. Maybe just to might do an end of season report and also to preview the summer tour and keep you updated with everything that's going on. Twitter, Instagram, newsletter and Substack to keep informed. But once again, yeah, thanks for listening.
Chile matches is in 2 weeks on Saturday, 2.5 weeks time.
God, it's an absolute like grind this season. It's absolutely true. Poor guys. Like, cool.
Hey, folks, I'm Mark Maron from the WTF Podcast, and this episode is brought to you by Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues, your ally to help tackle your allergy symptoms this season. I love the change of seasons, but nobody loves pollen and all those other things floating in the air that make you sneeze during this nice weather. Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues are hypoallergenic and allergist approved. So fight back against watery eyes and runny noses without worrying about irritating your skin. For this allergy season, grab Kleenex and face allergies head on.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.